Welcome to Whistleblowers, Series 2, Episode 1, Missing Person. The unfolding story of Melissa Caddick, the vanishing millions, and the leg found on the beach. We're back for a new year, folks. My name's Greg Kerr, and we thought we'd get the year started with this intriguing story of the vanishing of the financial advisor, Melissa Caddick. Good morning, Jennifer. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you very much.
Before we go to the bio on Melissa, what have you been up to over the last few months?
Oh, I have just been watching the unfolding. Many drug arrests that I've noticed over the last couple of months. Some of the container ships are still slow coming through, so there's still police operation on it all. And not really that much, just seeing what happens.
We've had a big week in crime. We've had Melissa Caddick's leg washing up on a South Coast beach. We've had the Tasmanian wife saga, the case being reopened. And we've also had the Folbig serial killing murderer, the breakthrough there with the DNA testing, discovering that the kids may have actually had a heart condition. So we might bring listeners up to date on those. But the one that's really captivating everybody's mind at the moment is the story of Melissa Caddick. And Melissa Caddick, for those that don't know, is a beautiful young businesswoman. And she went missing with $30 million of clients' money. Now, this happened in November. Is that right, Jennifer?
Yes. 12th of November, she vanished.
And she lived in a part of Sydney in the eastern suburbs known as Dover Heights. A month after Melissa Caddick disappeared from her home in the eastern suburbs of Sydney, the court heard that more than $13 million was reportedly misappropriated by Melissa from her clients who had trusted her to invest the money. After federal police searched her Dover Heights home as part of the Australian Securities and Investment Commission investigation, the businesswoman disappeared on November 12. Now, what's the sort of timeline that you've been able to research and discover some of the events that happened, possibly happened after November the 12th, Jennifer?
Well, just think about this. The 10th of November, they froze. 10th of November 2020, they froze all her bank accounts. Now, if she had gone to the takeaway shop and done a tap and drive, whatever, Coles, Woolies, right, petrol, she would have known her accounts were frozen, nothing was working. Now, if, as people have suggested and theories are out there raving around, that she had a X plan, plan B, or to get out, why wouldn't she have just jumped ship then? She should have been aware of something was unravelling. Then when you think about it, the AFP turned up at 6 a.m. on the 11th of November 2020. She was still at home. She was in her gym gear and in her white runners. And those white runners were shown on the AFP filming. So they worked out that the foot that appeared down the coast 3 months later was related to Melissa Caddick. Interesting that she was dressed for the gym at 6 a.m. for the police, or were they early enough that she was still in bed and got dressed? So then the next day, when she went for a run at 5:30 a.m. that the son said he heard the front door, That wasn't her normal pattern because it didn't happen the day before.
No, it was a different time.
Yeah, so that's interesting, isn't it?
It's certainly interesting, and the more you look into this, and some of the well-known people in the media, crime investigators, and Jennifer here herself, the more they dig into it, so many things, so many questions remain unanswered. One thing that struck me, you said initially, was the actual leg and the part of the body in the shoe that was found on the beach 400 or something kilometres south at a beach called Tarthra, right down near the New South Wales.
340 kilometres away.
We don't know how long the foot was in the water, but one interesting thing you said was...
Okay, the shoes were white when she was in the film for the AFP, and they're like a grey colour by the photographs. But they didn't have like a seaweed or a greeny slime on them. Didn't have barnacles that had been floating around. Now, the interesting scenario to Australia and to Canada is that I have alleged that the scorpion gang relates. In Canada, they call it the red scorpions. But they've had 20 to 22 feet turn up, and it's on their beaches, and it's like as though the extra air they're saying within the shoe is why it floats away.
So the shoe ultimately brings it back to the surface.
Yes.
And this looks like it may have happened, the last short period of time, not 3 months ago, as we're being led to believe, you know. And this is probably what the, you know, playing the devil's advocate here, the murderers would like to think, as to think that it was just a simple suicide where Melissa's walked down the street on her jog and jumped off the cliff. But you just discovered something interesting here tonight about the CCTV footage and where she lives.
Okay, the AFP, when they raided her house, they took all the video surveillance evidence, the recorder, the cameras would have been there, but nothing put together. But Willangra Road, to get to the Dover Heights, you've got to cross Military Road and Lord Howe Street to go down Liverpool Street. Like anywhere along there, you're 2 to 3 blocks away, and they're large blocks to the edge of the cliff. So you think one house would have a camera.
And it's a very prestigious part of Sydney. It's at the top end of town, and it's a very high cliffed area. It's near the opening of Sydney Harbour, so the cliff faces are very high, and there is notorious suicide spots around that area. So, you know, if you're plotting a murder, you know, this would be the way to carry it out and just say that, you know, the media and the police probably think it's just a simple suicide. But like you say, most of those houses in that area would have security on them. I know for a fact everybody that comes from wealthy suburbs have all got cameras that shoot out onto the footpath so they can identify intruders. So at the moment, we're being led to believe that there's no footage of Melissa. And the reason that this case has created so much of a stir amongst the community is... the savings that people were giving Melissa to invest as a reputable, you know, financial planner, she was reportedly using the money from her clients to fund an extravagant lifestyle. Her investment firm, known as Maliver, is also reported to have been working without a license. Miss Caddick is being handled currently by the New South Wales Police as a missing person while under a court order. All of her possessions and records have been frozen, as Jennifer said. And $13 million is the figure that we've been led to believe. Melissa Caddick is believed to be 49 years old, and we can assume that she was born in 1971. She's an Australian citizen, and it does seem that her social media platforms had all been mysteriously frozen, but a WhatsApp account, which had mysteriously been accessed at least twice since Miss Caddick disappeared. What have you got on that?
Well, I have a link into that because one of her friends had said that linked up to her new phone number. Now, that had been last seen on the Tuesday at 1:44 p.m. So who took that? Was it a police had taken it, or was it left behind at an office or something and somebody else. Now, when you went through all the information, and another astrology and crime lady has been doing that also, she thought it might have allegedly linked to the brother, had been accessing it, because he's actually the manager of her estate. So he would have the right to access it, I believe.
So let's get to the family. Melissa is a Sydney-based businesswoman. Now, her parents lived in an Edgecliff penthouse. Her husband, Anthony Coletti, Coletti sounds like an Italian name, and Adam Grimley, her brother, worry that the valuables will not be adequately preserved after being confiscated by authorities after things had been frozen for at least 3 months before her abrupt disappearance on the 12th of November. Miss Caddick had been under investigation by ATSIC, the corporate regulator. Miss Caddick's husband and 15-year-old son, a hairdresser turned DJ lover, will only have access to $800 a week for reasonable living expenses under the court order. Her husband, Anthony Coletti, depended on her earnings.
Yes, but that money was supposed to stop this week. But what I've seen from the liquidator has submitted into the courts.
So just go into Anthony Coletti for a minute. Okay, picture what Jennifer just told you. Okay, Melissa supposedly went for the 5:30 run, has gone missing, jumped over the cliff, according to what we've been led to believe. Now, later that morning, 9:30, she was due in court for a hearing. What happened?
Was it the next day or was it a couple of days?
It was the next day, I think, yeah.
So it was 30 hours Melissa had been missing, and the husband got on to the court, which was an online system, to say he could not find her.
So, yeah, we
haven't reported her missing at that time.
So we're going to leave this one up to the investigators. Hopefully we're getting to the bottom of this, but it's a big red flag. Why would he appear instead of her in that hearing, what, some 20 or to 30 hours later, and not have mentioned it to the police? So she wasn't reported missing for over 20 hours or something, as it says.
30 hours. Had not... So he appeared in court, on an online court, and then said he hadn't reported a missing, then went to the police. Yes. So there's red flags on all of that.
And the other interesting article that the Telegraph running, that John Ibrahim had a fascination with Melissa and was seen at the house not long after she went missing. So
oh, I didn't know that bit.
The Telegraph's running that story. And that there is an association. And for those that don't know, the Dover Heights area, I'm calling it the Bankstown of the eastern suburbs. You've got people with a lot of money, but some very interesting behaviour going on down there. So the Ibrahams are connected to, whether it's the Coletti's or Miss Caddick in some form. Stay tuned to the Telegraph reports on that one. Let's just have a listen to this report from Channel 7, because it sort of helps put the other possibility that Jennifer's talking about, the floating legs in Canada, into perspective.
In the disappearance of Sydney con woman Melissa Caddick, police say parts of a human torso found at Mollymook on the state's south coast are not hers, but they have confirmed the remains of a foot in a sneaker, which were discovered further south, do belong to Melissa Caddick. The 49-year-old vanished in November after ASIC officials raided her home. Caddick is accused of swindling around $20 million from investors. Remains were also found at two other beaches on the weekend, and they are undergoing forensic testing. And criminal psychology expert Tim Watson-Munro joins me now. Tim, morning to you. New South Wales, it's hard to sort of follow this police investigation each day. It seems to have something new, but New South Wales police have not ruled out murder. They say suicide is more likely. You believe Melissa Caddick was killed. Why do you think that?
I think suicide's possible, but the least likely option. She's dead. We don't want to defame her too much, but clearly a narcissist. Clearly somebody who has no remorse, psychopathic in terms of her manipulation of others and so on. And I think she would have had a plan B. So both sides are possible. I think it's more possible and probable that she ended her life at the hands of someone else. She was either killed by people who knew her or somebody was standing over her to get the money and so on.
Right.
So it's more likely that she killed herself.
Do you want to come in there, Jennifer?
Yeah, I was just going to say the standing over. You know, the standing over a woman seems to relate to a gang, to King's Cross. And really, a woman's an easy target to stand over. But men are too in this regard, because you've got to think that Melissa Caddick tasked all her investors to go through her same accountant. So he should have had red flags way before anyone else.
The accountant.
So if not, then why not?
Okay, yes. Well, that was what I was going to ask you. If she has met with foul play, who could be responsible? Would it be most likely? I mean, the police must have a list as long as their arm. A victim of her scam or someone else?
I think it could be a victim of her scam. It could be somebody who just wanted the money, may have tortured her to get the money. Or somebody who's a co-accused. There's a lot of money that's unaccounted for, and it may be that she worked in concert with other people, and it would be the perfect crime to kill her, leave her foot on a beach. By the way, how many beaches and how many sand shoes would have her foot? You know, it just seems the probability of that is very, very remote. So it's quite possible that she was killed and other people have the money. It's that whole spectrum of possibilities, but I think the greatest probability is that she was killed at the hands of somebody else.
I have never in my life as a journalist seen police through the newspapers and through the media go into so much detail about, you know, where a body could end up on a beach and how far it would float and what happens to a body. I mean, it's awful to read.
What are your thoughts on that, Jennifer, the body? What do you think possibly could have happened there?
Well, it's interesting because I had looked at the picture that they showed of the shoe, and while the campers that had found the shoe on the beach, they had had to fight with a seagull that wanted to pick up the shoe, which I thought was interesting. That was before the police came to photograph, so they didn't actually pick it up, and the shoe was found quite close to a flipper, you know, like a skin diver's flipper or a surf, you know. But you started to think, well, you know, the bird was going to pick it up, so, like, it mustn't have been that heavy. And then when you looked at the picture, it's like as though the whole ankle has dissipated, has come apart. You know, they used to say in King's Cross you had concrete boots, but she hasn't had the concrete boots.
No, she didn't.
No, but was it just one thing to turn up? So that the case before the courts and the Federal Circuit Court can go forward, because whilst no body parts appeared or no ID of Melissa Caddick sightings, then they couldn't, like, sell the properties. They couldn't do anything. It was all just frozen. So, yeah, you could see somebody then wanted something out of it, maybe.
And now things can happen because if they, you know,
yeah, but if you listen to what all the parts are saying, the family still think they'll be given some money out of the state, because they've got to work out whether her funding for this lavish lifestyle had been part of this from 2012 to 2020, September 2020, had been in that. Use that money to buy that house at Dover Heights. But then the parents' house at Edgecliff comes in, and I think there's several properties by what I've been reading. The house at Dover Heights has $4 million. So the police first said it was worth 7.1, or the media. Now they're saying it's 6.1 million, 4 million owed on it. So there's only 2.1 that's left as an asset. And there's, when you go through it all, yes, there's a couple of million she's had. But then what I write about the drug network is that at each stage, it's 10% they get. You know, it seems as though that she was living off some of it, but not off all of it. I believe something's happened to that mummy. And there was a note on one of the withdrawals, and it said a note, and it said Qantas. But the liquidator had thought it was airfares, but it could be anything. Mm. Could be anything.
Okay. But do you think that she, the original theory that she jumped off the gap in Sydney is totally out of the question, and that this, if it's a murder, happened more recently than November?
I think it happened more recently than November. It's not my area of expertise, but experts that I've spoken to say you would expect much greater degradation of the shoe than the one that they've found. When she disappeared, it's peak time in Sydney. There's people out on boats. People commit suicide at the Gap, sadly, too often. I've spoken to people from Bondi Rescue over the years, and they're constantly finding people out at sea. She wasn't found. So although it's not totally impossible that she would have floated all that way over 3 months, I think it's highly improbable, and more likely that she was killed closer to where the shoe was found more recently.
It's just all so strange, isn't it? Tim, it's great to chat to you. Thank you for your insight. We appreciate it.
Well, there we go. So,
or the shoe had been sent somewhere, like put in a box and sent to somebody. You know, taken out to sea and then dumped. That's a possibility.
One other expert said that Melissa's still alive, and this is the way that you can, you know, take part of the leg off and you can still be alive. And, you know, they're open to all kinds of theories at the moment, like you said. It's a bit of a far stretch, that one. Have you heard of any other crimes like that ever happening?
No, not really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Melissa, would you... Jennifer, would you like to say anything more about tonight's episode?
Oh, I just think it's interesting that I did an email to the police on the 20th of November, and I put in it that Melissa had linked in to being working with the ANZ Bank. So when I went back to my email tonight, so tonight's the 5th of March, 2021, that link had been a blank page. So it's been blocked. It's actually there, but it's been blocked. So it shows you that the police are investigating, and it seems that some of my research is coming up and linking in.
It's interesting. Well, we'll bring you up to date with this case. We just thought we'd start off the year with this story, which is unfolding. And please join us again soon, where we'll take a look at this other case that's just popped up in Sydney this week. It's the jailing of Kathleen Folbig. She was the one that killed the four babies, her children, Caleb, Patrick, Sarah, and Laura. And they're saying the scientists have discovered that possibly she was wrongly imprisoned, because they've discovered that the DNA and the testing they've got now presents a heart problem in two, maybe more, of the babies, and they could have died a natural death, and that she should be released. So I'm sure Jennifer will bring us up to date with developments in that one. So that's it from Whistleblowers here tonight. The 5th of March, 2021. We'll be back soon with another episode. My name's Greg Kerr. Have a great March. Good night.